You're listening to Discover Hope with Pastor Tom Leake of Hope Bible Church in Columbia, Maryland.
Because God does not play favorites, newsflash, we should not either. We want to be like Him. Now, this lesson is important to learn, and I would say it's important to relearn, because I'm sure this isn't the first time you've heard this, but it's important to relearn it. If we, the church, fail at this point, we cannot represent Jesus to this world.
Jesus didn't come to walk with the rich and powerful, but the poor and needy. He came to serve, not the important religious leaders, but to save the lost and sinful. He honored humble, repentant faith, and not prideful piety. He was generous and kind to those who were forgotten, passed over, and persecuted. Today, Pastor Tom encouraged you to examine how you treat the poor and the rich that you meet. Will you, like Jesus, sit with, honor, love, and serve those who seem least deserving of it? Now, here's Pastor Tom in the book of James chapter 2 as he continues his message, The Sin of Favoring the Rich and Powerful.
The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at, and this was Eliab, the eldest brother. You know, he's the tallest guy. By the way, if you're not the eldest brother and you're kind of short like me, then you like this verse. Because there's Eliab and he's got the big broad shoulders, tall head and nice face and he's strong and everyone gives him respect. And he's got like what, seven brothers younger than him? The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature because I have rejected him. For God sees not as a man sees. So there's David off tending the sheep, and each one of David's older brothers comes passing through, and it's like, seems like a futile mission for Samuel at first. You know, nope, the Lord hadn't chosen that guy. Nope, not that guy. Nope, not that brother. Next. Don't you got any others? Well, there's David. I mean, he's out watching the sheep. He's the youngest. Go get him. God says, that's the one. I've chosen him to be king of Israel. He looks at the heart. Because God does not play favorites, newsflash, we should not either. We want to be like him. Now, this lesson is important to learn, and I would say it's important to relearn, because I'm sure this isn't the first time you've heard this, but it's important to relearn it. If we, the church, fail at this point, we cannot represent Jesus to this world. We cannot. It takes everything that he taught and it turns it on the head. If we're the same inside the church as they are outside the church has become irrelevant. By the way, it's kind of ironic that the churches that are trying to act more and more like they're the same with the world to attract them into the world so that they can be relevant are the fastest ones to become irrelevant in the eyes of the world. And so they spike in their membership and over time they just drop because what's the point? I mean, look at the whole ministry of what happened to Robert Schuller. He was the one at the cutting edge of all this stuff that taught Bill Hybels his things and his church was just, the whole Crystal Cathedral thing was massive and now you look in there and they're all gray-headed. You know, they're not relevant because they decided to base their relevance not on eternal truth but on whatever it was. We don't want to be so relevant to the world that we're like the world. Then we'll become irrelevant to the world. We need to be different. That's our relevance. All right, now second is the illustration in verses 2 through 4. Look at that again. So this is sort of a scenario. For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, verse 3, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes and say, you sit here in a good place, and you say to the poor man, you stand over there or sit down by my footstool. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? So James singles out, for illustration's sake, the distinctive seating in a Christian worship service that favors the rich. By the way, seating was very important in those days. It indicated status. You remember Jesus even told a parable in Luke 14:7 to the invited guests when he noticed how they had been picking out the places of honor at the table, saying to them, when you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this man. And then in disgrace, you'll have to proceed to occupy the last place. Where you were seated was very important to the ancient world. It meant something. It honored people. And here James imagines the rich man being given favored seating over the poor man in the worship assembly. The word for assembly here, by the way, is literally the synagogue. Some actually dispute whether James meant a literal synagogue. Why would the church be in a synagogue? But it is the only way that the term is used in the entire New Testament. It means a literal synagogue everywhere else it's used. And you may remember back from chapter 1, verse 1, that James was writing to the diaspora, that is the Jewish dispersion beyond the nation of Israel. And knowing that all of the early Christians were originally all what? Jews, right? There's no good reason to deny that many of the early believers in Jesus would be meeting in the synagogues worshiping just as in Jerusalem they met in the temple to worship. Remember, James was writing somewhere around 45 AD to the Jews. These are Jews, many of them who had fled due to the persecution that's recorded in Acts chapter 8 through Acts 11. They had spread all over Israel and gone beyond the borders of Israel. And many Jews were becoming believers in Jesus as Messiah. And so they were meeting in the synagogues as believers there, gathered for their normal worship and their learning. All the early Christians were Jews before they were even called Christian. And so their understanding of how to do a worship service came from the Jews. It came from their experience in the synagogue. What happened in a synagogue? They would take time with instruction, with reading scripture, with getting testimonies from other people that would come, visitors, and tell what's going on in other parts of places. They would have some song. They would have prayers. This is what they did in the synagogue. And so that would naturally transfer right into what a Christian, early Christian worship service would look like. In these synagogues, the prominent men would get the prominent seats, of course. Where were the prominent seats? Up front and then along the walls. These were beautiful structures. Sometimes they'd have a mosaic kind of a floor, well done. And so you'd have these very fancy chairs up towards the front, the chair of Moses for teaching in the very front facing everyone. And then you'd have some seating along the wall as well, and that would be a prestigious place to sit. The others would have to come in and stand or sit cross-legged on the floor. And so James well envisions something that might have occurred, in fact, that's something he might have seen, and that is two visitors who come simultaneously on the same day into the same assembly. And the way it is worded, it makes the most sense that he's talking about two visitors here, not members who have been here on and on. Did unbelievers and visitors come into the worship services in those days? Of course. 1 Corinthians 14:23 indicates that unbelievers did visit the Christian meetings. So let's focus on the first visitor, the rich man. He strolls in. Immediately he's recognized. His stunning outward appearance attracts the eye of everybody. He's dressed better than most, if not everybody there. And he looks good. It's a nice gold ring. Immediately their eyes recognize that. Actually, the word here means a gold ring. Fingered, which means that he could easily have more than one gold ring on there. And knowing how the ancients were, he probably did have more than one gold ring on. And they valued gold in the ancient world probably even more than we do today. It was available, but not anywhere near as available as it is today. You know, today everybody might walk in with a wedding ring, and no one would say, "Wow, you got a wedding ring." It wouldn't be quite the same thing. But back then, it was more prestigious. It was something people were trained to look at, look down at the eyes and notice, oh, wow, see that? That's hard to get. And he has five or six of them there. That means he's someone special. So they thought that way. They looked that way. Multiple gold rings, higher status, more favor. That's just the way it worked. Remember the rich father in the prodigal son parable in Luke 15? The son had repented and returned. He immediately said, put a fine robe on him and a ring on his finger. That's how you honored somebody. Now look what else this rich man had there. He was dressed in fine clothes. It's interesting what that word fine means. Actually, it means bright clothes. Lampreys. Stunning clothes. Something that stood out. Not your common soiled, dirty, well-worn kind of work clothes or everyday clothes. This was something that in their society, as soon as someone walked in the room, well, that's not like what the most of us wear. Bright, maybe bright white, maybe vivid colors of some kind. Some suggest possibly a formal toga, Roman toga. So he's got all this gold, he's got these fine clothes on, and those are two pretty good indicators that he's a man of status, influential in the community, got a lot of riches. I tried to imagine the modern equivalent of this because it's a little harder now. You know, good clothes are common around here. I'm not sure people are trained to be able to notice what kind of suit a person is wearing. You know, I had to do some digging. What are the good kind of suits, you know? I don't know what you've pictured. Your imagination might do better than mine, but maybe they come in with an Armani suit, you know, they got a Rolex watch, really good one. Alligator shoes, I don't know. stepping out of a Jaguar, maybe better a Porsche. And they come strolling in, and they look good. Hair's done well, $600 haircut. And it's immediately noticeable to the society. I think it's implied that this rich man goes out in public and goes to his destination dressed like this on purpose. It's intentional. He knows he's going to get the respect where he goes. He probably coveted preferential treatment. By the way, have you ever noticed if you dress up really nicely with your best, slap a few good things on, you go into some of these fancy stores, they actually pay attention to you? You go in with sweatpants and it's like, don't even notice you're there. Same person, different clothes, walk in. How may I help you? Have you noticed our products? You know, squirt yourself with a little something too, you know, come in there. By the way, those of you that work in those kinds of environments, you got to watch your own heart and attitude that you don't slowly over time drift into honoring that more and dishonoring people, even in those venues where, look at that guy. I'm not giving him any mind, you know. So I think he did this on purpose. The man's entrance into the synagogue provided its own loud nonverbal communication. His attire was a trumpet of his status. And then comes in the other guy. Maybe a few minutes later, we're not really told. Poor man strolls in. The word poor, by the way, refers to economically poor. The illustration bears that out. This man enters in with what? Dirty clothes. Dirty clothes. The term dirty in Greek is the same word that was used for filthy moral attitudes and behavior back in chapter 1, verse 21. This is stinky stuff, smelly stuff, bad stuff. These clothes not only look bad, they just were grimy. Maybe he came from work and he's in his grimy clothes. Was he purposefully wearing his worst to church that day? No, this was probably the best he had. By the way, have you ever considered the difficulties and the trials of the poor who, when they're at home and they look at what they have to wear, how they look, and they know they're going to go in public and they know they're going to be compared, not even necessarily with the rich, just the average people, and everywhere they go, they're going to be a little bit of that comment, that look, that ignoring. They get slighted all the time. Slighted all the time. And how embarrassing that is for them. How they might just sometimes just say, I'm staying home. What's the point? A constant trial that the rich don't even understand, they can't even empathize with. Now please understand, it's not a sin for a rich man to wear rich things and to go out in public, or a poor man to visit church in his rags. Neither of that is the point. What James is really interested in is the congregation's reaction to these two men, right? That's what James is really interested in. These two men become a test of the congregation's faith in Jesus. Outward appearance is the primary basis for how people show favoritism. And it is the point of the illustration. This attire reveals hearts. What did this congregation do with these two very different men? Well, in this scenario, they give very special attention to the rich man. Instantly, the people are, you know, they look at this guy, and it's like, if they don't say it out loud, wow, who is that visitor? Quickly, bring him up here to a seat of honor. I'd like to get to know him a little better. Why? Well, we'll get to that. Make sure he's comfortable. Make sure he's not sitting on the floor, not with those clothes. And get him a footstool. Bring it over. Obviously, he gets the nice treatment. Men like this. They like to be treated this way. You and I like to be treated this way. That's why we choose the fancier places to go when we get a little money. Best places, pretty places. Remember what Jesus said about the Pharisees in Matthew 23, 6? They love the place of honor. They love it. It's nice. At banquets. And they love the chief seats in the synagogues. Banquets, synagogues, best places. I don't know, maybe it was the leaders who gave those orders for this guy to be seated this way. Maybe the ushers in there just kind of knew what they were supposed to do. The sad thing, the unfortunate thing, is this attitude seems to have infected the whole church. They're fawning over the rich. But the poor, oh, the poor, poor man, he does not get so treated, does he? What did they say to him? They saw his clothes. A quick judgment was made. This guy's a nobody. Oh, well, there's room for you here in the back. Or if you'd like, you can come sit by my footstool. Honestly, they really have a non-reaction to him. No one really much notices him. No one's going to be upset if no one talks to him or he doesn't come back the next week. The rich are sitting there with their feet up, eyes are gawking at them, trying to buddy up to them. The poor, barely even noticed, inconsequential. Very clear distinction has been drawn. Honor and comfort for the rich, disdain for the poor. This congregation has done a very good job of expressing the values of the world that surrounded them. They have shown that they love the things of the world. They love the riches. They love the power. They love the influence, the prestige, the lifestyle, the fancy attire, the gold. This congregation has acted like their faith in Jesus made no dent or impact, not only on the people around the church, but on them. It was the same inside the church and the same outside the church. Do you see why James felt so compelled to bring this up as an illustration and correct this? Again, I say, if the church becomes like the world, who needs the church? And so we come to verse 4. And a rhetorical question, which is really meant as an indictment of their hearts. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? They have become judges with evil motives, making distinctions. James equates these people and their motives with unrighteous judges who would take a bribe. Unrighteous judges would take a bribe to give out a decision because they favor the rich and they favor the favors of the rich and they favor the money of the rich. And they've done exactly the same thing, and so their heart and their motives are evil. This is not just that they had bad manners towards the poor man. This is evil. This is not just poor hospitality. This is totally wrong motives or thinking. The word is their thinking. Dialogismos. Their thoughts were evil. And here is where the insiders in the church were opened up, so to say, to the surgery of God. Verse 4 is probably the hardest part to listen to when the Bible exposes motives, when the Bible forces all of us to look inside and see what you and I don't want to look at. When this portion of the letter was read out loud in the church the first time, I bet you the room got kind of silent. Heads might have dropped. Some people might have begun to feel remorse. Some maybe even sobbed. The hard-hearted ones might have tried to pass the buck. Who, me? I didn't do that. That was you that did that. The congregation knew the teachings of Jesus. They knew all were supposedly equal in Jesus, like what Paul wrote in Galatians chapter 3. All of you are sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all of you who are baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. This is the church of Jesus, and it must be different from all of the other establishments out there. Yes, there are going to be fancy places out there where money and fancy attire speaks, and what you wear matters very much to them. Not in here. Not among us. No one buys a row in the front or along the walls in the back. Nobody gets the first spot always in the potluck dinners or whatever else is there. We don't ask anyone how much they make before we extend membership to them. By the way, mostly I commend this church for doing the will of God. I think most of you have had in your hearts this very thing. I have confidence in this church concerning your heart and motive. Still, I wonder how some of us would treat the poorest of the poor if they came in here. Have you given much attention to someone that you've seen come in here to church that you look at them and they look like they couldn't return too much to you? Those that don't have much to offer you. What if a homeless man came in here? What if he looked like a homeless man? What if he smelled like a homeless man? What if you talked to someone and you found out that they don't have a job, they're doing very poor economically, they might lose their apartment, and they come in here? Would you greet him with the same warm enthusiasm as somebody else? I don't know that seating in the church really matters that much in here, right? I mean, who cares whether you're sitting in the back or the front or left side or right side? Is there a special spot? So for us, the application has to go beyond the seating, I think. It doesn't really matter where you sit in here. I don't think there's a spot of honor. But what about taking a little extra time to talk to someone? You get into conversation and after a minute or two, you realize, this guy's not much. I'm moving on. I'll find a polite way to just move on to the next conversation. You ever done that? What about when you're kind of thinking about who you're going to invite over to your home, you know? Oh, let's invite that person over. They are such and such. I wonder if we could show favoritism that way. You think? Maybe? How about a needy young mother comes in here with four unruly, disheveled kids? And you're like, man, that's going to be a lot of work. I don't want to be around that. Or are you going to talk to her in a way that she feels loved and supported and accepted right here? Maybe give her extra time. Listen, there's subtle ways of ignoring people. There's subtle ways of gravitating towards the people you really want to talk to and get to know. When we flock around the well-dressed, the well-positioned in society, and just kind of ignore those on the lower social ladder, doesn't that also reveal something about our motives? And shouldn't we give those on welfare the same reception as those making a killing on Wall Street? I wonder if sometimes you choose your associations within church based upon how nice their house and car and job are. Let me broaden this application out just a bit. I wonder if we would treat famous people who might come in here differently from the run-of-the-mill guy or gal, like a sports hero. But seriously, though, how would you feel? You look over and there is RG3, Joe Flacco. Would you treat that person different than the ball boy? What about a politician? You may hate politicians. A favorite writer? Who would you fawn over? Who would you think, I got to get their autograph? That's where your temptation is. A movie star, comedian, business mogul? You understand the point, right? One day, someone rich and famous is going to come walking through those doors. And I wonder if on that same day, someone the polar opposite will walk in those doors. And if I wonder when you go home, you'll be saying, did you see that so-and-so was visiting a church today? But not recognize that other guy. What was his name? I don't know. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. Why not? Because I was over talking to the other guy. Brothers and sisters, let's check our hearts and not let them become worldly.
Do you pay attention to the poor and needy? Do you show disdain or quickly forget the least in our society? Or do you, like Jesus, love and serve those who the world ignores? Today, Pastor Tom challenged you to imitate Christ in the way you treat others. He didn't come to serve the important people and die only for the religious. He came for all who would believe in him. All are equal in Christ. He loves rich and poor.
I am so glad you joined me today to dig deeper into God's Word. Before we share what's coming up next time, I'd like to give you the opportunity to join us in sharing the gospel message here at Discover Hope. would you prayerfully consider becoming a financial partner of this ministry? We're a listener-supported radio program, and all gifts are very appreciated. You can get all the information and donate online by visiting hopebible.org/radio. That's hopebible.org/radio.
When you evaluate and make judgments on others, are your judgments righteous and fair, or are they evil and worldly? Oftentimes, it's common to isolate and focus on certain factors when you judge others while ignoring other aspects. Next time on Discover Hope, Pastor Tom will help you understand how humans tend to be poor judges of others and how God is the only right and good judge. He judges in holy wisdom and compassion. There's much more to learn from the book of James, so we hope you'll tune in again next time. If you'd like to listen again to today's teaching or share it with friends and family, you'll find it online at hopebible.org. Thanks for joining us on Discover Hope.